We're about to begin this part of the program, the Q&A, not the Q&A, the conversation. Before we do that, can anyone hear me with this microphone in the back? How are we doing in the back? Okay, good. Before we start, just want to bring to your attention that there is a discussion guide that ITBS has created for American Denial. I made a few copies and put it on the information table, but it's also available online. I put a link to it on the communitycinema-dc.org website, so you can go there, click on the discussion guides tab, and then all our discussion guides up to this point for the series are posted there. So we're going to start our discussion. First of all, we're going to start with you. Does anyone have a thought or comment that they would like to share about this film?
Before the film started, one of you all made the comment that America was founded on equality, and that could not be farther from the truth. When America was founded, women of all sorts were the properties of their husbands. Black people were the properties of their owners. So when we get to this American exceptionalism, it just kind of makes my head go. Thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna put a little twist on that and ask, what happens if you are a black woman? Who are you the property of? Any?
Also, would just like to ask whoever can to just give a little bit more context on the study. So, for example, it wasn't really clear what was the objective of the study. Was it supposed to be diagnostic or more prescriptive? And also, if somebody could share just a little bit about what kind of, how was it perceived, for example, by the Carnegie Foundation who had commissioned it? And also, what were the immediate impacts? I mean, I saw that later on down the line, there were some impacts. But just kind of, how was it perceived? What was its impact? And what was it supposed to do to begin with? Thank you.
The study was done around the time that the Nazis were in Germany persecuting the Jews. That is clearly an example where the Jews were not black and the Nazis were not, the Nazis were clearly white. So I think that the focus on color was less relevant than Myrdal recognized. What he should have, his question was a very good one, to the whites in the South when he was saying, how are you acting differently than the Nazis were toward the Jews? And instead of following the logic of that to the theory of racial domination, to the theory of social control, the film focuses on color rather than the origins of social control. I think that the association test is an example of where we're measuring associations in the United States between black and bad, and in this white, presumably white country, which now of course is no longer majority white, or is changing in that way, but the systems of control, I think, is really the heart of it and is reflected in our racial views, but it's the system of social control. Myrdal seemed to be so preoccupied with idealism, the American creed, the Declaration of Independence, of equality, and I think he was not a Marxist. He was looking at creed more.
We're going to take two more. Eve?
Thank you. I want to make a comment and ask a question. The comment I wanted to make is something that I got from my late father, who was the first general counsel of the Civil Rights Commission and the father of affirmative action, who used to say, who used to say that he would rather deal with a white person who would call him a nigger to his face than to deal with somebody who said, my best friend is black, or I have black friends or something. And also, I think a lot of people in our time are experiencing a different kind of racism. It's economic, and a lot of it, for black people who live in this new DC, it's just like the WP. So how is the WP different from Myrdal's American Dilemma?
And one more, anyone? What's the WP, Eve? White privilege, WP. Okay, so I'm going to come back to our speakers today. So, Mark,
yes.
You told me not to call you Dr. Bolden.
Mark is fine.
So, based on what we just heard from our audience, let's talk about the question of the study and its impact. When you saw this film, American Dilemma, how and based on the classes you teach at Trinity in counseling, how useful is this study? How useful is this film? What could be the potential impact?
So first off, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, pleasure to be here with my colleagues, and family, and friends here. If I can, I want to work backwards, right? And answer some of these questions in the context of what the study was proposing to do. So the study is funded by the Carnegie Foundation that is obviously looking to find a non-biased researcher. And to do so, they have to stretch the European world to find a European factor that hasn't been part of an imperialistic process. You know how difficult that is? So they got to go to Sweden and find this one person who has access to a non-imperialistic history, because non-imperialism is the best example of not being biased. Which is to say, give us the keys to studying imperialism from a non-imperialistic perspective. So the answer is there. What is the answer to ending imperialism's effect on the people who are subjugated by imperialism? Stop being imperialistic. Did the study accomplish that? Are we still in an imperialistic mode of existence? Obviously. And so the study sets out as a very well-conceived and funded academic exercise in futility. And as for the film itself, the film gives us a wonderful entree into how much money can be spent on somebody who has no clue about a context and get paid a lot of money for it, and then come up with answers that the funders are not interested in implementing. So to answer the question about how did the Carnegie Foundation receive it, they received it well. They promoted it for a while. You can see it's still getting some turnout because it's now got a documentary about this white man from Sweden, the non-imperialistic country, neutral Sweden. And everything is saying that we're still in the same position, a position that he came to 40 years later. The folks are very confused. America believes in this creed and practices this other thing. And I want to have some fun with this other thing that is the unconscious space that is so well articulated and cultivated by Freud and colleagues. But let me give some space to my colleague, Dr. Burroughs, Brother Todd here, to also add on to that. Why wasn't Du Bois given that funding?
I was so enjoying what you were saying, I wanted you to keep going. But let me just take 5 minutes and do a little critique. I am a journalist and a freelancer historian. So let me just put on my critic's hat for a minute and even talk about this film. First of all, I agree with you. This film starts with some assumptions about American society that I disagree with. Frederick Douglass said that America was guilty of crimes that would disgrace a race of savages, which meant that the white people who committed these crimes were worse than savages. So you start there. Then you deal with, if you are a gentle person, you might deal with the critique of James Baldwin, who wrote about the illegitimacy of American society, of which race was just one prism, in which he was talking about how America was an illegitimate country based on illegitimate principles that they don't even enact. Now, if you're not genteel, you can go to a man by the name of Malcolm X, who gives an even stronger critique of imperialism, so-called American democracy, et cetera, followed by Kwame Ture and other people. So I am not impressed with the context or the content of this documentary. I just have to say that. This documentary veers dangerously close of for the millionth time doing what happens in many films about the African-American experience, in which the white experience is some metaphor for their growth and development, and they use the black people as tokens for the white person's growth and development. Now, I'm sorry, filmmakers, if you're here, but you got dangerously close to doing that. And I'm not impressed. And it's clear why you get funding to do films like this if this is what you get to do. And I just have to say that. Now, in terms of what we would talk about with Du Bois, Du Bois should have a bit more of a role in this documentary, being that if you go and read the biography of Du Bois by David Loring Lewis, David Loring Lewis states very clearly why Majdral is chosen. He's chosen because Du Bois is trying to do an encyclopedia of the Negro, and he's trying to get Carnegie funding. Carnegie doesn't want to fund it. So instead, they think of another idea. Well, instead of funding Du Bois, let's go find some objective European and have them analyze America and analyze black America. And as David Loring Lewis said, Majdral's brilliance is equaled by his ignorance of black people. So I'm not impressed that Majdral comes and does a great analysis, great in some ways, not in others. But why is the analysis great? Well, what the documentary doesn't emphasize, because it's so busy talking about Ralph Bunche, is that Majdral hires every major black and white sociologist he can get his hands on, including E. Franklin Frazier and a whole bunch of other people. By the way, these are, coincidentally, the same people Du Bois wanted to hire to do the black encyclopedia. So Du Bois, because he is interested in what Majdral is doing, actually meets with Majdral, advises Majdral, and even goes through rough drafts of what Majdral wrote. Now, that's not in this documentary, and I don't understand why. I do understand the obsession with Ralph Bunche, being that black nationalists call him the George Washington of Israel. I mean, I do understand that. So I understand how that would make Independent Lens and PBS. I get that. But there's a broader history that is not really touched on here that I think should be. So I just wanted to say that as a media critic. I think it's important to say that. So when we talk about the analysis of race, Majdral does a good job because he has excellent people teaching him everything he needs to know and doing his background research for him. So there are some things that he got right. I agree with our friend here, is that what Lewis says, that Du Bois publicly praised the study, but privately he was concerned because he said that Majdral focused too much on the psychological aspects of racism and not on the economic systems. So Du Bois privately made that exact critique that you made. So that was visible to him as well. When we talk about oppression, imperialism, et cetera, Dr. Bolden had it completely correct. So those are my initial comments. I'm a black press historian in terms of what I studied. So I read Mitchell's chapter on the Black press, so I can talk about that if you want, if you really want to know what Black newspapers were like in 1948. I can critique Mitchell on that if you want to hear that. But other than that, those are pretty much my general comments about this.
And so if I could follow up with, is the doc useful in the work that I do? It is, right? Because in talking about the psychological aspect, which is really interesting, coming from a sociological study of society and then turning it into what is the individual's unconscious or biased beliefs like. That perspective has, I think somebody was talking about the economic aspects. A sister in the back was talking about the economic aspects of racism. And there are dozens and dozens of studies that look at how racism goes from a very outward, upfront, conscious sense of identity to a very covert form of identity for people who want to continue to exercise power without seeming like they're doing that. And so you have John DeVidio and Gardner's research of aversive racism that talks about how racism might go into these economic structures. Which really, when we talk about that, as you mentioned, that Marx or socialism isn't at all invoked in the film, really speaks to how the denial would say that capitalism can't be put on a table. The same way that folks who would enslave, murder, rape, exterminate, biologically commit warfare against, or use biological warfare, all of these things can coexist with the deep and profound sense of Christianity. So like if you get the actual dungeons where enslaved or captive Africans were held before they were taken off of the continent of Africa, in Ghana, Congo, Senegal, all of these different places, you have like the dungeons themselves, which are like, you know, prisons and pre-US prison form. And then on the top of them, you have churches. And then you would have these priests blessing the ships that would carry African people across these oceans. And then you'd have the same kind of process upon receipt. Mm-hmm. So then if the denial is we can't talk about capitalism, we can't talk about Christianity, we can't talk about the extermination of American Indians, we can't talk about the continuous patriarchal sexist system against women, then what the hell can we talk about?
Right.
And we can talk about our ideal or our conscious self. Because if you understood the violence that occurred within the subconscious or the unconscious, well, then we would just have all-out warfare. And if you don't want all-out warfare, you have to make it seem like everybody who has been the subject of warfare is now going to be treated as an equal. Meaning, you have the opportunity to join us. So Africans in this country are in a very precarious position. We are trying to commit that which has never been done in history. How do you coexist with your rapists and have an egalitarian society? And somewhere that's supposed to exist.
Right.
Somewhere there's supposed to be a society out there where the people that perform the greatest, most horrific acts of terrorism can now become a side-by-side child sitting next to the next child,
right,
friend.
Right.
When you have these histories of the most brutal forms of oppression. Mm-hmm. And that denial is there for people of African ancestry. Mm-hmm. That comes up and it resurfaces every single moment there is a vicarious trauma of a police brutality case. Or what Fanon calls the Eurocentric gaze. So it's that look that whites give to blacks that suggests, I know where you were a couple hundred years ago, and if I want, I can return to that moment any given time. And so you'll hear it and you see it in black circles when black folks are talking about white people, and if they're in their office and white people are around, they'll go, white people. They'll just whisper it, right?
Right.
And it's them performing the function of stepping off the sidewalk so as not to be seen as wanting to be equal to white people. And that level of denial, as they talked about briefly, occurs within the medical settings, because all of this analysis sits in the place of what were Africans like during chattel enslavement. And those theories, so like what I teach is really just looking at the psychological theories during chattel enslavement and how they carry over into now. And if you were to read like the brilliant arguments of Southern secessionists like Samuel Cartwright, you pull out a couple of diagnoses like drapetomania, this fanciful idea of wanting to be free. And so what do people who want to be free do if they're enslaved? They run away. And that is a form of psychological illness because you are out of your cotton picking mind. Get back on that plantation, right? But there's another side of that that we never articulate or even examine is, what about the folks that fought and made their way out of enslavement? What is their psychological state? And what did they do to the slaveocracy during that period of time? And so part of it is, you know, the American dilemma is a problem of Negroes having to coexist with terrorists. And then the other part is, well, what about the Negroes who broke free and became the terrorists to the terrorists?
And if I could just add a couple of things to what you just said there. The dilemma is not as complex as I think it's trying to be portrayed here. Mary Baraka once wrote an essay about Jesse Jackson in 1988 when Jesse Jackson was running for president. And Jesse Jackson did, you know, that big speech he did at the Democratic National Convention when he talked about, you know, that everyone's patch wasn't big enough. But if we take the patches and we turn it into a quilt, we then get, you know, what we need. But Baraka asked a very painful question, which is, how can both the slave master and the slave both be right? What we have gone through with this current presidency is this idea that we're going to make the slave master and the slave both be right. So the dilemma is trying to implement something pretty much illogical without the full political, social, cultural, historical context of what happened to all of us. And so I think that's important to think. Another thing I want to say that I think this film goes a little bit too simplistic with, and Mark as a psychologist will know much better than this, is that there are various forms of black resistance. One of the forms of black resistance, many of us who are from middle class backgrounds, or like myself from the ghetto, from Newark, New Jersey, who now pretend to have a middle class background, right? One of the things that we don't like to talk about in terms of resistance is subculture. So I think that what Ms. Alexander was referring to as embracing the stigma, I think it's a little bit more complex than that. I think there have always been black people who have resisted going by America's mores and norms, et cetera, because they knew they were not accepted as Americans. So they were not going to go around and try to imitate somebody who hated them. And so they developed subcultures, offshoots of the English language, offshoots of American ways of being, as a form of resistance. So it's not just that they were stigmatized and they decided to internalize the stigmatization. That's a little bit too self-hating for me. So I just wanted to make that, being that Alexander is the person that the filmmakers have chosen in order to make this kind of analysis. Alexander, who, as you know, critics have pointed out, does not deal with at all black political resistance in her book on black incarceration. So being that you've chosen somebody who does not deal with the political aspects of radical black resistance that results in incarceration, I don't know if she's the proper spokesperson to describe the forms of black resistance that are internal in nature. So I just wanted to say that.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
And one thing I wanted to explore with both of you is because what came with the package of this film was to encourage audiences to explore the implicit association test, which I was a little, you know, on a fence about. But after talking with Mark, you know, I went ahead and put the links up. Tell us, what is the importance of this test and what you've given it to your students, Mark? And also, Todd, if you're familiar with the test, what do you think is the point of the test? And, you know, it doesn't put people always in a comfortable place, but it puts you someplace.
So the film takes American denial as its title, and denial is, of course, one of the defense mechanisms developed by Freud and then later developed by Sigmund Freud and later developed by Anna Freud, his daughter, and analysts at large, right? And in that idea, these defense mechanisms are there to keep the self-esteem high or the self represented as good. And so if the defense mechanism is there and denial is like the lowest form or the most primitive, in Freud's words, Sigmund Freud's words, most primitive form of, one of the most primitive forms of defense mechanisms, it's there to make sure that those remnants of anything that discomfort us are not attended to. Or if they are attended to, we just act like they don't exist so we can see the self as good. And it is very difficult to get people to admit to being racist, which is in and of itself a foolish idea, because racism is a system of racial privilege that gives whites advantages over all others within this context, right? It connotes power. And power is never supposed to be something that is symmetrical, meaning power is always used to be abused. So in the context of giving the test, the question is really, I already know you don't want to say that you enjoy your privilege and power. I want to see if subconsciously you really do enjoy your privilege and power. And we use the test to get around the defense mechanisms, so that people can then say, goodness, you know, if I have 75% of my responses are leaning towards white superiority, then what does that say about me? The same way the internalized racism occurs for black people, where you would get 40% having a white referent point, which in this media environment is almost astounding to think it's not higher. Meaning, people are likely, for African folks, faking good. So for my students, they would come back and they'd be like, I've got no discrimination against light-skinned folks. If they're dark-skinned or if I'm dark-skinned, I got no discrimination against light-skinned folks. Or I don't have a white preference. But what part of that is speaking? That's their conscious mind, right? So consciously, I have no problems. I'm good. Right? Because I don't want to be seen as one of those 16th century racists or enslaved Africans. Right? On the flip side, if we didn't live in a world of denial, then people would just say, when I look at you, I see slave. When I look at you, I see slave master. And what's the relationship between slave and slave master? Control or be killed. So if we're walking around looking at each other thinking, I'd much rather you be dead, that would be a really uncomfortable place to exist, right? So if people give me that gaze, I say, stop looking at me like a Mike Brown and you want me shot, Darren Wilson. But that's an uncomfortable thing to say. Because if somebody were to say, I think like Darren Wilson, what they're really saying is, yes, homicide can be justified if I have power and the black person doesn't. So if I have that gun, I'm comfortable shooting you. Right? And we see it all the time in this society. You know, people rushed off to be like, je suis Charlie Hebdo. Not thinking about French imperialism in all of these African countries and all the Caribbean spaces. And, you know, just, I mean, the denial is so thick. Like, you think about these countries with like 10 million people have colonies with like 10 times their size. Or like African, there are 14 African countries still subjected to a French economic system. And that money has absolutely no worth outside of those countries. Or, you know, French being the lingua franca of any African country, English being the lingua franca of any African country, you know, what does that mean? How many people are in the UK? Right? Is this idea of speaking English overbloated? The fact that we're speaking English now is a testimony to being conquered, right? So, I mean, those ideas of, you know, how does the IAT get around this stuff just says we take for granted so much of our oppression and our oppressive natures that it's become secondary. And so we want to skip the primary defenses, get to your secondary defenses, and then discuss with you, how racist are you? And then the denial kicks in. I am not racist. I think the test is wrong. It couldn't have been right, right? You willing to give up Northwest beyond 16th Street? Hell no. You crazy? You want to go swap houses in Southeast on MLK? Hell, not until they build that riverfront.
Right, right.
And then we can switch, right?
Right.
So for the example, I would use like Monopoly in my classes. And, you know, if you know the Monopoly board, you know on the corners are two things, right, across from each other. The police and the prison. Now, when they were talking about how the police would jump out on these young black folks, not just males, but young black folks, it's because they're hanging out, right? And if they're hanging out, potentially it's on the corner. And that surveillance goes along with that idea of the defense mechanisms or the intrapsychic factors as well. That superego is supposed to be society. The superego keeps things in check. It's surveillance for the individual. So if society is surveilling the individual, what needs to be repressed in that intrapsychic factor? The id, the pleasure principle, the raw aggression. In this country, what represents the pleasure principle of raw aggression better than an African? If you disagree, watch Scandal, right? Scandal. There's so much context in that. It's essentially an update on Sally Hemings being raped by Thomas Jefferson, right? But all of these things have to replay themselves because history is to be repeated. Absolutely, right? And she shoots at her father. I mean, it's just the Freudian dynamics in there are just slick. But Freud was really imprinting this idea and language on society. But really, a European approach to an American understanding, and then trying to universalize it. So, you know, my students hear about this idea that in the Oedipus complex, that Freud is like, you know, children grow up fascinated and sexually attracted to their parents. They're like, ew, that's disgusting, right? But that's the depth of that European psychological projection, and then trying to universalize it. Like, this is how all people think.
I just wanted to say, in terms of these surveys, I mean, I agree with Dr. Bolden. I mean, these surveys are very important to talk about implicit bias, explicit bias, but we all have biases. I think that what's important is how we choose to implement these biases and who has power to implement, who doesn't have power to implement. To me, that's always going to be the main issue. Having a bias doesn't necessarily mean that you have the power to implement a bias. And it's power that I think we have to deal with. I just want to point out that the little bit I read of Midrall was repeated 20 years later with the Kerner Commission. I mean, can we talk about that? And I noticed, again, I guess I'm really picking on the filmmakers here, I noticed that wasn't, you know, represented either. The Kerner Commission. The Kerner Commission. That was the commission that President Lyndon Johnson asked for when Newark and Detroit went up in flames, and he wanted to know what was going on with these black people rebelling and what were they rebelling against. And so he got Otto Kerner, the former governor of Illinois, to set a commission together. And Kerner, to his credit, interviewed everybody from Martin Luther King to people who were in the streets damaging property. And the Kerner Commission shows less of a dilemma than Midrall, because the Kerner Commission just says point blank, racism, white racism, is the problem of these disturbances. Now, whereas Midrall's complex construction is praised by its Carnegie funders, the Kerner Commission is completely ignored after it's released. President Johnson did not like the results of the Kerner Commission, so he pretended it did not exist. And that was because it had a very accurate, very accurate view of what was going on, and there had to be denial for that. So I just wanted to say that I think that whites have a problem dealing with the directness of both white supremacy and anti-blackness. I think they've begun to work on white supremacy with white privilege. I think white privilege is an excellent first step toward dealing with white supremacy. I think that after whites deal with white supremacy, I think the world has to deal with anti-blackness. And I think that those two are conjoined right now, but there might even be a point one day, maybe 100, 200, 500 years from now, where they will be separated, where whites will get rid of white supremacy, and then we can deal with anti-blackness. But these are only small steps that are made. So, for instance, this documentary is a small step for people to deal with the dilemma of how America viewed itself. As a black press historian, I see much less of the dilemma than the filmmakers have seen and shown, because the black press was clear on what they viewed as American society. And Midrall himself talked about how the black press existed in a completely separate world because no white people had ever heard of it, had ever dealt with it. These were segregated black newspapers. They were for black people. They were sold in segregated stores in places across the country. So Midrall even acknowledges that there's a whole dialogue going on in the black press that white people are not even aware of. That is not so much the case today. I think today more people are aware of more dialogues, and that's why whites are beginning to deal with white privilege, an important first step. Documentaries like this, even though I have my problems with this, are important first steps to allow people to at least grapple with the complexity that whites have invented about race relations in America.
They can
take my mic. I can project. You can take my mic.
You can speak out. You were talking about a couple of books that you said. The first thing was Samuel, but I didn't hear the last one I was trying to put in.
What I'll do is the Samuel Cartwright, I'll email the article to Michonne, and then Michonne, I'm sorry, I'm a walking dead dude, so I'm just going to Michonne real quick. All right, then stop correcting me when you're wrong. Get out of here. So I'll email it, and then you can read it for yourself and just, you know, delight in the racism, and it's a brilliant argument. And then I'll email some other documents as well, and you'll get the PDFs so you can actually just read them yourselves.
Do you want to come up to the front and so we can capture this?
Yeah, we can record.
Thank you.
One of the more challenging things was dealing with the dilemma and the perceptions, as you were saying, on a global scale, is anti-black, period. The programming, the kind of programming we would get in West Africa, I don't know about all over because I wasn't there, but you know, the kind of programming that people are exposed to is largely negative images of African Americans and what they're doing in the hip-hop, basketball, and these kinds of things. So when I would talk to them about their own history, and I would have to introduce their history to them because that's one of the vestiges of colonialism. If I am talking to a person who is an ambassador, which I was, and we were talking about the whole thing with regard to slavery, and he tells me, well, I said, well, colonialism was just as bad, and he says, oh, it wasn't that bad. This is the kind of perception that people have, and conversely, a lot of African people don't even perceive or see these things, and I think we suffer from the same thing in the States. My position is, and it's always been, I'm not worried about white privilege. What I'm more worried about is people of color and their psyche and how they accept things. The See the Doll study is devastating because this is transgenerational, and it's like soaked right into our psyche where we can't even perceive or even begin to imagine being a whole person and being accepting of self. So I'm a psychologist also, you know, got my doctor from Harvard and all that. So, you know, so this is the kind of thing. So it's really, really important that we, you know, just even here, but even abroad, there's still a lot of work to do. So I want to thank you for your comments and stuff. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Can we get everybody just to come up and get like a round robin of the questions? But in the meantime, I'll respond to that. It's a really good point. So the idea of internalized racism or internalized white supremacy or what other folks have talked about, like, is a colonial debt. And the colonial debt means, yeah, colonization was rough, but we got roads out of being colonized in Africa. Or we had dysfunctional governance, so we got a better government system, right? We have democracy. Yeah. So we've done some research as well in Ghana and found that there is a higher level of internalized colonialism amongst the folks who are more educated. And the fascinating part is to colonize people's minds, you've got to get them into a system where you can teach them what's right and what's wrong. And so, you know, they get in, like Ghana, they get that UK, that British imperialism, that, you know, the sun never set on the British Empire imperialism. Like, we got 24 hours of sun in summer imperialism, right? So they should be more colonized, but only as you go into education. And then the foolishness is we think the more educated you are, the more free your mind is, which is like the worst contradiction possible, because the school systems are the place where indoctrination occurs. So if you think about, like, you know, we don't have to look at African people. We could use this with the American Indians or the Aboriginal folks. They would snatch children up, throw them in these educational camps, say your parents know nothing, they're savages, they're brutes. They haven't been around. Oh, wait, they have been around for like 70,000 years. Well, we got 2,000 years of Christ. And mathematically, positive two is better than negative 70. You got to do that math, right? It's voodoo economics, all right? So think about these things, right? The more educated we are, the more indoctrinated we are into these systems. And that is true wherever you go with folks who essentially have imbibed into the idea that education is freedom. Not reading, but education. Because reading is really just understanding another person's language, right? So if I understand your language, I can read your stuff, I'll be like, we don't believe in this. You don't believe in this, right? So if the Constitution, like the preamble is given by the American Indian, if it's like the Iroquois Confederacy, you're like, you just stole this. You don't even believe in these things. You didn't have the language to say we the people.
Anyone else have a question or comment? Wow, you all just.
This is what coming out of denial feels like.
It's
like, damn it. Why you do that, man? Now we got to deal with this stuff. And not saying everybody here is in denial, but if we speak it into the air, it just shoots out everything else. We got somebody back here, please.
Can you come up to the microphone? We want.
We got to capture it for the posterity. And they want to record you with your name to make sure we can track you.
Okay, it's Oscar night too.
Todd, this is your.
Well, I was saying, I mean, there's a whole history of films in which black people are the background players, and their struggle is used as symbol for the white protagonist to grow and develop. And I mean, that is also. A colonial white supremacist concept, the fact that whites need the experience of the other, the exotic experience of the other, in order for them to grow and develop. And there's a whole Hollywood history of this, you know, with films like Ghost of Mississippi, Mississippi Burning. I mean, there's a whole series of films like this in which The Help is just, you know, the current example of that. So that thank you. That's a very common pattern, and the idea that white people feel free enough to do films on us in Europe comes from the fact that white people have felt free to do films on us ever since 100 years ago when D.W. Griffith did *Birth of a Nation*. That film's 100 years old. So there's always been a freedom to incorporate the African or African-American experience. Is just that now it's done, as Dr. Bolden was saying, with Scandal. Now it's just being done with finesse. It's being done with style. It's being done in a very intelligent, you know, post-modern, post-ironic way, which, of course, for us makes it extra ironic.
And I think John Singleton was the one who... John Singleton the one who recommended Birth of a Nation to the Library of Congress?
Yeah, it's Dr. Burroughs, this one.
I don't know that, but most film historians, even some African-American ones, they praise Griffith for his technical prowess in producing what is considered in the history of American film the first epic film. So there are black people who ignore the content of Birth of a Nation and look at its technical achievement and artistic achievement and still say it needs to be remembered and et cetera. You know, that's something you have to argue about with black folks. That's a Spike Lee on one end and somebody else on the other end fighting it out kind of discussion.
Yeah, the last piece I would share is that idea of the white reference point is just not going to go away. And this is where, you know, we talk about the idea of denial for African people. The UNIA, Marcus Garvey's organization, really dealt with this racial pride factor where they had black dolls and would produce them way before the doll study existed. Kenneth Clark, as a Panamanian from West Indian origins, who then lands in the U.S. and studies psychology, and really we should say Mamie Phipps Clark, because it's her study that's looking at the doll studies and using dolls as an avenue to examine the unconscious of black children. These folks were likely familiar with the Garvey movement being in Harlem in the 40s and 30s. It's kind of hard to ignore Garvey in the 20s through the 40s in Harlem. They likely had some access to knowing about the actual dolls themselves. And that idea of then examining the choices in dolls is really to say, are you a Garveyite or are you a Yankee? And if you go to like Caribbean spaces and hang out with the folks there and you're an African, they might look at you and they say like, you Yankee or you Yachty? Meaning, are you with us or you representing the U.S.? And if you're representing the U.S., then you're representing the imperialistic process of us being here. But my clinical work with children really does pan out with these things. Like I've seen it in the moment working with school children in kindergarten. When, you know, one darker-skinned black child says to another black child, you're white. And the lighter child says, why am I white? And the darker child says, because my skin is black. So you have to be white. It's not always a positive thing. Sometimes it's used to exclude people from blackness. Now the intervention there is like immediate and necessary. And anytime we can see these things happening, we have to undo them. And so that idea of like that bias that comes in, it's built into this American society. Of course our children are going to be susceptible to it, because that's all they get. So we don't have Garvey Children's TV. There's no Garvey Channel. I mean, if there was, he'd be killed again. Right? This is why they kill folks. These political assassinations exist for a reason. Right? I mean, that's why we're here discussing like this documentary, but then we're commemorating, right, acknowledging that Malcolm X is killed 50 years ago yesterday, right? So is there American denial? If there isn't, they might shoot you. Denial seems to be a safe place to be.
And on that note, I would like to thank our speakers this evening. I think this was the first community cinema this season where you just left the audience totally speechless. But if that's, what did you say, that's what denial feels like? We are moving to a good place because of that. But we don't want that to happen. But we thank you for giving us some fresh air, bringing some fresh air to the room. So everyone, again, we have our evaluations. We'd like to know what you thought. And you don't have to deny anything, just don't sign your name to it. And we'd also would like for you to stay in touch with our speakers or our community partners like the Institute for Policy Studies who consulted with us, and NEPFA recommended our speakers. NEPFA is always on plan A. He always brings me my real plan A. And you want to stay in touch with what they're doing at the Institute for Policy Studies, just check off the box and add your email address, and we have a box there to collect everything. So we look forward to seeing you again. Stay tuned for what I would like to say is a call to action when we bring you the home stretch on March 22nd. And we will be finishing the series out in May. We're going to take April off with limited partnership. There's a schedule on the table for the remaining two films. So thank you again. And be sure to tell your friends that American Denial will be on PBS on Independent Lens series starting tomorrow night at 10. I'm not sure the schedule, but check your local listings. I'm sure it's there. Thank you.